Good evening, everyone. This is Devin with a pre-show note. Please be advised that tonight's episode contains discussions regarding allegations of sexual misconduct and abuse involving former and current Trump cabinet nominees. Due to the sensitive nature of these topics, listener discretion is advised. Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Freedom Report. My name's Devin.
And I'm Jonathan. We hope that you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and we are glad to be back with you. On the topic of thanks, we wanted to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who is out there listening to us this evening.
Indeed. We realize in today's world, we're busier than ever. So a very big thank you to everyone out there who is spending this time with us. On tonight's episode, as Donald Trump and his transition team have continued to make headlines over the past 2 weeks, we wanted to turn the focus of this evening's episode away from Trump's Agenda 47 and look at what is currently happening with the transition team.
And as we expect this trend to continue until Trump's inauguration, we will likely continue this format moving forward. Looking into the week's news surrounding the Trump transition team, and highlighting points from his Agenda 47 and the 2024 Republican platform as they relate to the news.
The promised bonus episodes focusing on Trump's staff appointments are still to come. We hope to release the first of that series within the next week, so be on the lookout for that. But for now, we will begin tonight's episode by talking about the billionaires that Trump's election has benefited the most.
You know, let's face it, folks, in the plutocracy that we live under, the real beneficiaries of anything that is good going on economically are the billionaire class. You know, these folks do extraordinarily well, even when the rest of us are struggling to buy meat at the supermarket. And just to give some numbers here for you briefly, since the election, Jeff Bezos has gained an estimated $7.14 billion. Elon Musk, since the election, has gained about $90 billion. $26 billion of that was just in the day or two after the election. And I believe you've got some other numbers there, Devin, as well.
Yes, Larry Ellison, the co-founder of Oracle, which is a software company, I believe, gained $9.88 billion. Steve Ballmer, Microsoft co-founder, gained $1.82 million. Warren Buffett, the well-known CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, gained $7.58 billion, and Larry Page, the co-founder of Google, also gained $7.58 billion. So the total of these four men right here is actually an increase in wealth of $26.86 billion.
But when compounded with the super billionaires, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, we're looking at a total of $124 billion in profits split between six men.
Right. Just six men having an increase of their net worth of $124 billion.
And this isn't because they have invented something new, made some great innovation in their respective areas of the economy, or done anything really except just be wealthy and now be connected.
Wealthy and have a proximity to perceived power.
Yes. And I mean, that's what we're seeing right now as everyone goes down and basically kisses the ring. I don't mean any disrespect to the British monarch. You know, they actually do that, but they're a monarchy and that's what's expected. We're not.
Right.
And, you know, we have this man sitting down in what basically is his summer palace.
Which is also contrary to tradition of a transition team.
Yes, I mean, he's sitting down there receiving people to come and kiss the ring in his palace. And it is his palace. It was at one time, for those of you who do not know, the summer palace for the presidents of the United States until it was sold because they felt that it was over the top. And, you know, that says something, too, about how we used to be as a country and how we are now. But he's using this opportunity to avoid the traditional transition from one administration to another. You know, typically a president-elect receives monies from the federal government to pay for the transition, to pay for a team to help him with the transition and any other expenses that might be incurred. And in exchange, transparency is what we all receive. So we get to know where the money's coming from that is taking care of the president-elect's needs and his staff.
Right, and this is usually done by the president signing an agreement with the General Service Administration, which provides the team access to those funds that Jonathan was talking about. And I think it usually somewhere between $7.2 and $9 million.
And ironically, because, you know, folks, this man, Donald Trump, is the personification of irony. This is something that many people, adults even, have difficulty understanding, is the concept of irony. And in this case, the present rules and law for the transition was actually signed into law by Donald Trump in his first administration. And he's just going against his own law. You know, it's his own law is not even good enough for him. But it's always ironic. You know, he picks someone like Betsy DeVos to head the Department of Education, and her goal is to ruin it. And, you know,
that was in his first administration.
It's
Linda McMahon.
Who's never taught a class on anything in her life.
Yeah.
Except, you know, smashing a folding chair over someone. But, I mean, we'll get to that later. But the point is, it is filled with irony and things that should not be, but are. And this is not the way our presidents-elect are supposed to conduct themselves.
And it's never something that's been governed by law, because the tradition and precedent of it alone has always been enough. It's never needed to be governed until now.
We've never needed basically training wheels.
Right.
For this part.
And the Trump team did sign an agreement with the current administration, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was the document that kind of started the flow of information, which Trump had not started when he was a candidate.
Right. He had not yet started that because it just simply wasn't important to him to be up to date with what's going on. It never has been with this man. He depends upon everyone around him to just sort of spoon feed him what's going on rather than taking the time to parse things out himself, like other world leaders do on a regular basis. In fact, daily and hourly.
And while they did sign this agreement with the Biden administration, they have stated that they refuse to sign the agreement with the GSA. Again, the GSA being the General Service Administration. One reason that is extremely important is while the transition team is pledging to abide by several transparency customs, they are not legally bound to do so. So transparency customs meaning divulging the names of donors that give money to the transition team. And that in and of itself, given how much individual support Donald Trump has received throughout his campaign from several billionaires is troubling.
Right, and any time in politics you have a cloak of secrecy put in place, you know that people are up to no good. That's been true in any political situation throughout all of human history. When it becomes cloak and dagger, there's a reason why we've gone to this, and he doesn't want us to know who's funding anything, who's paying for anything. He doesn't feel it's our business to know.
Oh, yes, and without this signature on this document, the traditional decorum of this transition period is that no money is accepted from foreign entities, and he's not I don't believe he would be legally bound to do so, and at least if he did, he certainly would not have to disclose it.
Well, and I think it's also important to note in this situation that in order to conduct this business that he's doing, we're sending emails and text messages and, you know, back and forth between whoever, wherever, and him and his staff. And I'm just wondering, Donald, are you using your private servers in your private residence? Like Hillary Clinton might have done when she was Secretary of State?
Oh, yes. All those emails. that must be being sent back and forth. And we already know the care that Donald Trump treats sensitive documents with, as a pile of documents, literally a pile of documents, was found in the bathroom at Mar-a-Lago.
Banker's boxes right next to the toilet paper, because, you know, that's where we put our protected national secrets.
Right, so he could parade visitors through and show them what he got.
Sort of a trophy that he wanted to show off, you know, like a large game animal that he had taken down. In this case, it was American, the beginning of American democracy, the first shot. He has no respect for anyone. He does not hold himself to any rules, even his own, as we were just talking about. And I really do think it's important that we point out that he's doing exactly the thing he tortured Secretary Clinton for doing.
Yes, and he vehemently stated numerous times upon his campaign, and it became a rallying cry, lock her up. He thought she should be in jail for doing this. And because he's not accepting these funds, they do not have secure email addresses being provided to them.
These are not federal government servers that we're using. We know that. But we also know when it comes to locking people up, not even 34 felonies are enough to put him in jail for a day.
Oh, indeed. Well, I know he visited the jailhouse and got his mugshot, but speaking of law enforcement, that's a nice segue. Trump is also, at this point, continuing to refuse to sign an agreement with the Justice Department that would allow the FBI to initiate background checks on transition team members. So that currently means that we have a bunch of people running this transition of a new incoming administration that are not being looked into by the FBI. At my current job, I had to pass an FBI background check. You also had to pass an FBI background check. It's actually become a running thing about how angry you get when you have to do one. It's like, can't they just pass them along?
Yeah, I've had four background checks this year for various reasons. You know, when it comes to some of these, it's just insane. But the point is, my job is not a big, high-paying job. I'm not in charge of the military, nuclear warheads, running the government. These are not responsibilities that are for me, but I cannot have my job, my little job, if I have a felony or fail these checks or refuse to have them. But it's okay now for the highest level people in our government to flout this rule. And you know, it also brings us to another point I'd like to, that you brought up, Trump's propensity to use his personally owned venues for government business, and then to turn around and charge the people, the taxpayers, for the use of those properties. And you were wondering if perhaps we'll be getting a bill for his summer palace at Mar-a-Lago?
Right, because that is currently being used as the headquarters for his transition team instead of the offices that are normally provided in the...
It's the old executive office building. It's that French Second Empire. This may not mean a lot to a lot of people. It is a really fancy old building that's right next to the White House. You can't miss it. Some people say it's really gaudy. I think it's awesome. But I would. But it's a nice office. It's just, it's more humble, obviously, than this. If you've seen pictures of Mar-a-Lago, it's a European palace. I mean, gold on the walls, gold on the ceiling, gold dripping off everything.
In Trump fashion.
In Trump fashion, you know, over the top, you know, gaudy. But it's in stark contrast to what the Founding Fathers intended. There's a reason that the United States puts its head of state, its president, in the White House. It's a big building. It's big. But when you look at it, if you ever stand in front of it and look at it, it's just a nice big building. It's not overwhelming. It's not majestic. It's actually kind of humble. You know, and if you sat it next to Buckingham Palace or Versailles, you'd be wondering if perhaps maybe our country had about 10,000 people. You know, it's a humble building. But the point was to bring some humility to the person holding this office and holding this sacred trust, you know, with the American people. And nothing can be further from that desire than what he's doing. It's tacky. You know, you sit down in your summer palace and receive, you know, foreign leaders coming to you and kissing your ring and just caressing your ego. It's disgusting. This is so anti-American. Every other country can do this. That's fine. I don't care what they do. This is the United States, and this is not how we do business.
Right. It's never, it's always been, when foreign dignitaries visit, it's always been to, like you said, humble office buildings, even though, I mean, let's not mince words here. The White House is still a mansion. It's still fairly impressive. Yes. So, but when you're visiting, you know, when you're visiting...
But don't forget, Donald did call it a dump.
No, he did. He did, didn't he?
When he first moved in, he was like, he couldn't believe how much of a dump it is. But it's not that it's in poor repair or something. What he's talking about is its simplicity. Yes, it has elegant rooms, elegant staterooms that are nice, and for you and me would be amazing. But for someone like him, who's used to European-style, palatial, whatever, you know, it is rather humble and a dump.
So the transition team and the various happenings there is just one of the things that's happened since we last had an episode with you. Another thing on November the 13th that was announced, sources close to the former First Lady, Melania Trump, stated that she will likely spend a majority of Donald Trump's next term in office away from the White House, either in New York City or Palm Beach, Florida, according to those specific sources. They did say, however, that she does intend to attend quote-unquote important events and also have a platform of her own, but it's just a very, it just adds to this odd dynamic. She, as a First Lady prior to it, she seemed very resentful, almost. There's the infamous talk of her...
Well, her cussing all the way down the hallways when she found out she was in charge of Christmas.
Right. And that's fine. Christmas isn't your holiday? Okay. But really? You're like, that's not going to get out?
Well, I mean, and it's always been expected of the spouse of the president that they be involved in the cultural life of this country in some way. No, they're not necessarily elected specifically to a role, but we do consider the spouse of a candidate in every election. It's important to us who has the ear of our future president. No one is closer to a president, one would think at least, than their spouse.
Right.
And in situations like John McCain's run for the White House in 2000 against George W. Bush in the primary, he was destroyed because it was discovered that his wife had a prescription for antidepressants.
Which is just ridiculous. Which is
nothing now.
Yeah, but I mean, considering Melania's modeling past.
Yes, she is the first lady I have seen all of.
And to set the tone for this next term, she skipped the traditional yet symbolic meeting with outgoing First Lady Jill Biden. The transition team actually did have conversations about this with her and told her how important it was that she attend, but she cited conflicts relating to her book.
And that's the thing about it. I know this seems petty, but decorum is important. Donald Trump has done a lot in his time to sort of erase from our memory that we once expected our presidents to behave themselves and to be decent and to follow protocol. And this refusal on her part, the same for their spouses, is petty that she did that to Dr. Biden. And it would have been an opportunity to help bring the country together a bit, to see them together being kind to one another, and maybe healed a few wounds for some people. But as we know, that is not the objective in any way, shape, form, or fashion of Donald Trump or anyone closely associated with him. They want to divide and destroy.
And the only reason that I bring up this next point is because of a statement that was made from the Trump transition team, and that is when they brought up the signing of the agreement with the GSA, one of the things that his transition team stated was that them not taking the government funds in this sense would save the taxpayers money. So that brings me to the point of Melania living separately. Now, I realize that Donald Trump already had a household established in New York. I don't know if they already had property in Palm Beach, Florida, but the added security of her not being at the White House is a practical point that does bring into account cost.
Yes, it is. It is a divided security detail now for the two of them. she has to be protected as the sitting first lady. Protection has to be.
I wonder if they'll buy floors in Trump Tower. They probably already have. Wonder if Trump received that money.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, we may seem to some people it seems a bit petty to make those jabs, but we've never had a president do this because we have a clause in the Constitution called the Emoluments Clause, and no person holding public office in the United States is supposed to receive monies, you know, for their services, so to speak, other than their salary. You know, they're not supposed to be making money off the office. And he has done these things. And basically, if there's a rule to be broken, he does it. You know, I just brought up emoluments. That's a word we don't even use that often. And it goes back to the 18th century and before. But 18th century for our purposes. But if you want to talk about the 18th century, he's invoking laws that were written in the late 1700s for some of his policies. It's like he just is searching for ways to mess things up and to obfuscate from being clear and transparent at all.
Right. And going back to the agreement with the GSA, Trump's transition team did release a statement of ethics that his transition team would quote-unquote abide by. I don't know if they're thinking that is good enough, rather than signing this GSA document, which would hold them to account for the things that they're doing versus this ethics document that's 2 pages. I think it's like 10 points maybe. But another thing that ethics document does not do is outline how Trump will detangle himself from his interests. That would be conflicts of interest when he takes office. And I would hazard a guess that is something that he won't do, or he'll do it like he did the last time and kind of shuffle things around to where it is in the hands of somebody that's extremely close to him. And I doubt that those, I don't recall those being blind trust that he did before. Is that the case?
Not with, and there was always discussion about just how blind a trust is when your daughter holds one of them or whatever.
And her husband.
Right. And
XYZ.
He's always doing things this way. And it just seems it's hard to digest all of it, really. It's thoroughly disgusting. And in any other time in our history would not have been tolerated. But here we are. And speaking of thoroughly disgusting and never would have been tolerated before, let's talk about Matt Gaetz for just a moment.
Oh, Matt Gaetz. Now, we realize that Matt Gaetz has since removed his name from consideration for Attorney General, but he was Donald Trump's first pick to be Attorney General. We have a detailed timeline that was so dutifully put together by ABC News. The link for this will be in the description of this episode, along with all of our other sources. We will just be using this as a reference. We won't be hitting all the points because it is quite detailed, but...
Well, I mean, and just to kind of put it, to encapsulate it here, to make it simple, you know, the man was accused and investigated for sex trafficking, for inappropriate sexual activity, I believe with a minor.
Yes, with a minor.
A 17-year-old. We have the fact that his term in office was spent enduring an investigation. I'm just saying enduring. I'm sure it was terrible for his own party in
he
charge.
He doesn't seem to care, but...
But it was an investigation that found, apparently, quite a bit of information that was disturbing. But Mike Johnson, our beloved speaker, shut it down. We're not going to ever know what that committee, the ethics committee in charge of this, found. Apparently the American people don't need to know what we're spending tax dollars on with regards to inappropriate activity by those we have elected to represent us.
Mike Johnson actually did say that he didn't think the contents of the report were quote unquote relevant, that the public didn't need to be made aware of that.
But I think that you've heard it from a lot of people, Devin as well, that Matt Gaetz was thrown out there first and foremost to be kind of the closest analogy would be kind of a frat house hazing of new members or whatever by the guy in charge of the frat to basically make them eat awful in order to win his love and believe in their support.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are speculating that, or a lot of the major news outlets were speculating that this was some sort of loyalty test from Trump because Matt Gaetz is so terribly unqualified. I mean, he is a lawyer, but that's about
He is a lawyer, but that's about all you can say. He's only tried a couple cases, and that makes him fit to be our number one attorney for the entirety of the United States. I wonder how many people looked at this and thought, ew, really? This is your first guy?
There was an article that said when Trump had, I believe that there was a closed door meeting with the Republicans to announce that Matt Gaetz was going to be the nominee, and there was an audible gasp in the room, so that if that gives you any indication, and there were people on both sides in Congress that were calling for the findings of that report to be made public.
Yes, several Republican senators surprisingly did do their job and put up some resistance to the executive branch and what they perceived to be overreach in this, because the individual chosen is not in the public's best interest.
I'm sure that the multiple reports, we have the accounting from ABC News, but there are multiple reports from lawyers who are representing women who were victims and or witnesses of the sexual misconduct that he took place in, did not help matters.
And of course, Elon Musk was there cheering him on, you know, cheering on his appointment or his nomination, I should say. But does anyone else out there, are you looking at Elon Musk and thinking to yourself, what are you doing there?
Right.
Who elected you or confirmed you to this post that you're holding and this influence that you're wielding? And
this made-up post that you're holding.
And what is it you're in charge of exactly? I thought it was cutting our budget, and you're on the phone with Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump discussing Ukraine, and on the phone with Zelensky of Ukraine.
Was actually on the phone with Putin without Trump prior to the election. And
that's what I'm saying. You know, are you ambassador to Russia, ambassador to Ukraine, secretary of state? What is your role exactly? What have your billions bought you? I know you spent $189 million or 181. I don't remember the number right now, but it was around 180 or so million dollars officially that we know about.
118 of that, I think, were accounted for within the Trump campaign or directly to the Trump campaign.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate that, because I couldn't remember the exact number, but I knew it was a large number that you put into here.
He definitely got a significant payout for his investment, though, we can say that.
I find it is a remarkable success story for a potentially illegal immigrant.
Right. Yeah, denaturalization was a concern for him, I believe. But he actually went on record on the 19th after the story started to break on the 18th regarding the testimony of these women. Elon Musk went on Twitter, his little domain that he purchased. He went on Twitter to say, scandals are, quote unquote, worth less than nothing.
And this is, I'm gonna digress just a bit here, but this is the motto for Donald Trump. He learned this from his mentor. And Donald Trump's mentor was Roy Cohn. You should look this guy up. I suggest watching Angels in America if you don't want to read a boring story, if you'd like to see a nice, well acted out version of him. But Al Pacino did a great job, I think.
Indeed.
But he was a horrible man, an absolutely awful man, who did terrible things in his lifetime, very terrible, was responsible for people's deaths, used people's lives as pawns in his political games, had no morals, was completely and totally amoral, in fact. He just, to him, there was no right and wrong. There was just, I'm winning or I'm not, and whatever it takes to make sure I'm winning. That is, and if you're caught in a scandal, double down. That's his advice. Don't back down, don't apologize ever, and never admit defeat. Even if you're laying on your back and someone has a sword in your chest, still do not admit defeat.
Right, and I think that that was something that Cohn probably seconded. Mary Trump, Donald Trump's niece, I believe, said in an interview on MSNBC that losing was not an option in the Trump family, and admitting defeat or apologizing was a sign of weakness. So obviously something that carried on with his mentor, Roy Cohn, who, yeah, just a real peach of a guy.
I was always told when I was growing up, be careful who your friends are. Watch out who you kind of travel around with, because they identify to others kind of what type of person you are. And he surrounds himself with awful people. None of them are saintly. I have friends who are in religious orders, and they support him. And I can't seem to get an answer to the question of what in the world is it about him that is Christ-like to you? And I know our listeners aren't all Christian. I'm not trying to go there. I'm just trying to say, you know, for a man who says our nation was built on Judeo-Christian values, and that's what he supports, you know, holding Bibles up in the air, hawking Bibles for $59.99, you know, all the things that he's done, quoting incorrectly 2 Corinthians, all of these things he says, but what he does is the exact opposite. You know, right. Every single thing. And it just astonishes me.
Yeah, it is. It's baffling. And I know that he won, by and large, a majority of the evangelical Christian people of this nation. And it is just astounding. That's a topic that we could probably discuss singly in one episode. But it is astounding. And like you said, to surround yourself. And
my former pastor from my childhood, I won't give his name because he doesn't deserve it, but I will respect him. But this man is in charge of ministries that span North and South America. I mean, he's rather important in my former church. So he has quite a bit of influence around the world. And he basically was talking about Trump's win as though this is what will restore holiness to the American people.
And look at what Donald Trump has done since he's been elected, 2 weeks elected, and at least three of the people that, no, excuse me, four of the people have, at least that we're aware of currently, have been embroiled in some sort of sexual scandal or sexual misconduct.
And there's that expression that we heard growing up, where there's smoke, there's fire. You can only have so many puffs of smoke coming up before you're like, you know what, I think something might actually be on fire here.
Right.
And we know Donald doesn't have any respect for women. We've heard it from his own mouth.
Right, absolutely. That was very prevalent in his first campaign, and it's not something, again, we know he doesn't apologize, so it's not something that we're ever going to hear an apology for, nor him back down from. He believes that it's his God-given right, and that's, I mean, even in this campaign, he's going to protect women, whether they like it or not. Like,
exactly.
How clueless can you be?
Exactly. You know, you've just missed the entire point.
And picking someone like Matt Gaetz, I think, who has been accused of sexual assault and sex trafficking, that just goes to show you that his view on that thing, on those things.
And my understanding with Linda, it's Linda McMahon, right?
Linda McMahon.
Yeah, Linda. I couldn't remember
Secretary her first name. Of Education.
But pulling her in as Secretary of Education. Let's take her out for just a moment. I think it's important to point out something very important here to everyone. We are putting her in charge of the majority of our children in this country. The accusations of sexual misconduct against her are very much like those that were made against the Catholic Church and are ongoing, as the Catholic Church and the Church of England and all these other churches now are dealing with, you know, sex abuse. And in her own organization, my understanding is she did not address and kind of allowed, by not getting involved, these things to continue to happen.
Yes, they said that there were accusations that a member of her organization was committing abuses against children, and that she had knowledge of that and did nothing to stop it. So,
is this what we want, you know, in charge of our Department of Education and the welfare of millions of innocent children?
Right. And in this timeline, there is a glimmer of hope in the whole Gaetz situation. While it is a little bit of a moot point, at this juncture, I do still think that it's important, and I am thankful for those senators who are pursuing having that report released. But I do think it's important that we do press for that, because Matt Gaetz himself, in a statement that he released, said, quote unquote, "We need a leadership structure under President Trump that's going to allow for durability of our movement and ability to continue this great realignment of our politics. And so I'll play a part in that. I plan to be a big voice, but maybe just not as an elected member of the government." So I don't know whether that's a conversation that he had with Donald Trump behind the scenes that we were not privy to or what, but it does seem like Matt Gaetz, at least, is under the impression that he will still have a role in the Trump regime. And we have already seen that Trump is not just chomping at the bit to have these people go through the proper channels of having FBI background checks and all that, and all those other things.
But moving on from some of these cabinet folks to another form of misbehavior that Trump's victory has, it wasn't necessarily just his victory, but it's the GOP's, you know, reorganizing of our districts has created. This person you probably haven't heard of before the past week, Nancy Mace.
Oh, Nancy.
Of South Carolina, the former moderate conservative.
Yeah, she used to say that she supported whoever's right to do whatever, I believe, or yeah, something along those lines.
She believed, as long as you're not hurting somebody, then you're free to do whatever it is you feel is natural to you.
But Miss Nancy, on November the 19th, presented a bill that would restrict the use of bathrooms and locker room facilities at the Capitol to the sex that one was assigned at birth. This is particularly heinous because when asked by reporters if the bill was in response to the election of Sarah McBride, who recently made history being the first transgendered person elected to the House of Representatives, she will be the Democratic representative from Delaware, and congratulations to Ms. Sarah McBride.
Yes, indeed. Congratulations, and do not forget, I don't know if you'll hear this, but don't forget, we're all behind you.
We 100%. You are a trailblazer. You're so brave. And I have no doubt that you'll carry yourself with the grace and poise that you've already displayed, which I will read a quote from Ms. McBride here in just a moment. But when asked if this bill was in response to Ms. McBride's election, Mace replied, quote, "Yes, absolutely, and then some." Going on to say, again, quoting here, "I'm absolutely 100% gonna stand in the way of any man who wants to be in a women's restroom, in our locker rooms, in our changing rooms. I will be there fighting for you every step of the way," end quote. And Nancy's, and Jonathan mentioned that this was playing off of the rhetoric that Trump has kind of created the atmosphere for. This plays into, as we mentioned, that we were going to bring it around to the policy points that they laid out on their platform. Number 17 on their platform, the 2024 Republican platform, says to keep men out of women's locker rooms. It's extremely offensive language. They continue to perpetuate it. Nancy Mace is perpetuating it here, and other representatives.
I'm 46 years old. I have been to the bathroom many times in my life. I've done it in many places.
Yeah,
I have gone as to one the does. I've gone to the bathroom in great cathedrals, the National Cathedral, as a matter of fact. Went to the bathroom, and I've gone to the bathroom in huge shopping malls and in bars. And when I was younger, and I still drank, I may not necessarily remember everything from every time I went to the bathroom, but I can tell you this. I actually don't know if a transgendered person has used the bathroom at the same time as me, because when I go to the bathroom, I'm a single-minded person. I need to find relief. Excuse me as I find relief. Thank you and goodbye. Don't talk to me. It's I have rules. And so many of us have rules in the bathroom. Don't talk to me in here. This is my moment of zen. I'm not going to look at you. Please don't look at me. This is kind of how it is for most of us. So I don't understand this issue. Because frankly, I have met outside the bathroom transgendered people who I did not know they were transgendered. So when I saw them, I fully believed them to be what they were and what they are.
Right.
And it didn't offend me when I found out later. It didn't shock me. If anything, I just thought, well, God, you were meant to be a woman. You're gorgeous. You know, and it's just, for me, I don't get it. Because here's the thing, folks. If we're going to really have this law that no man is ever going to use a woman's restroom in this country, then we're going to have to hire a lot of police. Because there's going to have to be a cop at every bathroom to check people's genitals before they go in.
And I, for one, do not wish to have that be a law for myself, nor anyone else. And regardless of where anyone is on their transition journey, or what they may or may not look like, it's, regardless of any of that, this is unacceptable behavior.
It is. And I mean, I didn't point out, you know, the most beautiful people. All I'm saying in that is you don't know what gender someone is unless you violate their privacy.
Right.
Unless in fact you violate all of our privacy, and it's completely unenforceable. And I have never heard in my life, and I have read the news a lot, ever heard of a transgender person sexually assaulting someone in the bathroom. You know, we're attacking people for something that has never happened. You know, thank God for it, but it's never happened because a transgendered woman is a woman.
Right, and this type of language is used to be, it's meant to be divisive. It is meant to be diminutive to the people whom they are speaking about. And in Trump's campaign, It is, like we said, it's something that this has been coming. This is the environment that they wanted to create. I know Mike Johnson mentioned, I don't recall exactly what he said on this topic, but he did express support of Nancy Mace or the bill in some way. And also, Trump's campaign spent $215 million on ads that vilified trans individuals.
And let's face it, folks, we've had trans individuals in this country since the country was founded. They've always been among us. We've always shared our lives with those who struggle with issues of identity because biology is not perfect. I mean, as a gay man sitting next to my husband chatting with this evening, I can tell you my mother does not believe that homosexuals exist. We truly are, to her, fairies.
Yes. Clap if you believe in fairies.
So, you know, she doesn't believe we exist.
And like, she has the same, some similar views on
and on trans people. And on trans individuals, my family's horrible. And it, but it has been, it's been in our face for the past, just the Trump years. George W. Bush didn't talk about it.
No.
We had trans individuals using bathrooms of their true gender during the first and second Bush administration, and we heard nothing. This is being used as a wedge issue. Wedge issues go back a long way. You know, Queen Elizabeth I was famous for keeping one little group after another little group so that they never really turned on her. She had to do it to survive. It was a complicated time. But she was able to keep everybody kind of in check by keeping them after each other. And other leaders have done the same thing, and that's what we're looking at here. We're being turned on each other over issues like who's using the bathroom when we're not watching. Because I don't watch people who come in the bathroom. I really don't.
And who's marrying who or who's coming into this country. These are all issues that they are using.
The immigration has been going on in this country by the millions for hundreds of years. There are a lot of people here who do not originate
and
genetically from this land.
I would venture to say a majority of us do not genetically originate.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. You know,
I don't have to venture to say
it's true. You know, it's true. And when you consider Ellis Island, for example, these folks were not arriving with a passport or legal papers. They would come up and they would say their name, and the next thing you know, my name is, you know, Marta Brugelma. And they're like, oh, that sounds like, you're Martha Brugelman. That's your name. And they would be given an American name. And it would be signed onto their new documents, and they would be passed on to be inspected for lice, and then health, and then onto the streets of New York as a citizen. And it's like, that's what we used to do. And granted, there's a little more hands-on than people just crossing the border in the course of the night. True. I'm not discounting that, but what I'm saying is, this is how it's always been for our country. And
they don't call us the melting pot for no reason.
Right, we've salad bowl, melting pot, we have all these expressions because, you know, we've always been a diverse nation. You know, surprising fact, people don't know, when we broke away from Britain, the majority of the people in the colonies were not English. They were German and French and Portuguese, and there were Muslims. Oh my God, that scares the crap out of people when you mention it, but we had Muslims in this country who fought with us in the revolution. Not that many, but there were some. But the point is, our population was relatively small at the time. Single digits, millions, lower, for all the colonies together. I can't remember the exact number. I'll get it for later. I used to know. It's been 25 years since I was in a history class. I'm just saying. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is this is America. This is who we've always been. And we're picking these wedge issues to divide us, and we're not seeing what's really going on. Going back to the beginning of our episode, all that money came from somewhere that's in the hands of these six men who did absolutely nothing to earn it. I am an hourly worker. I work for hourly pay. And I am expected to work for the money I receive.
Right, and these men just had $124 billion appear into the, and yes, we're talking in the theoretical sense because it's their net worth, but still.
And a Republican would say, well, the market has decided this is what they're worth now. And it's just interesting to me that we have one set of rules for those of us at the bottom. We have to earn everything we have, and we get nothing given to us. Whereas those at the top have everything given to them and have to earn nothing. It is a shocking, I think the word is bifurcation, you know, of our reality. We just split into two on the issue of the wealthy and what they receive by virtue of simply being wealthy.
Right. And this is something, you know, obviously with Trump's stance on billionaires and tax cuts for billionaires, this is something that we will undoubtedly be talking about again. We will also be talking about his immigration policies in future episodes. I did want to circle back to
another change. Oh, go back to McBride, I guess.
Yes,
yeah, so Representative McBride.
Yes, I did want to circle back to Representative Sarah McBride for a moment. And again, as I mentioned, handling this situation with grace and poise, she did release a statement on social media. She said, every day, Americans go to work with people who have life journeys different than their own and engage with them respectfully. And I hope that members of Congress can muster the same kindness. And I think that that was a very, given the conversation that's taking place around her, not her election, and the hate that's being thrust at her, that was a very graceful and very poised way to respond. And I know, again, we are all behind you, and you are beautiful and brave and brilliant, and I have no doubt that you will represent the fine people of Delaware very, very well.
I'll second that, no doubt. And before we leave her, I did want to make one more point. It's a personal point. In my hometown in Tennessee, we had Spirit Week for homecoming. The last day of that, I believe it was, to show your spirit, all the guys were supposed to come dressed as girls. About 5 out of a class of 124 did. One of my dear friends did. And I did not, because I was terrified of appearing in public in clothing of the opposite gender. Absolutely terrified. And the things people said to my friend and to the other guys who did this were awful. And I'm like, but guys, this is showing school spirit. And, you know, by the way, not that it's important, but this particular friend has like 5 children now and has been happily married since 97 to the same wonderful woman. And it's sad that I felt that level of fear just to put a dress on for one day. And I think about it because, and I mention it because Representative McBride had to have that first day. And every transgendered person has to have that first day when you walk out your door and you're dressed according to what you believe to be you and what you know to be you and what is, by the way, you. And you have to face this. And the fear is so real. And I just wanted to say, bravo.
Bravo indeed. You, to Miss McBride and every person who is out there being their most authentic self, we stand with you and beside you, and you are beautiful and loved, and please do not ever forget that. But
before we leave tonight, we won't spend a great deal of time on it tonight, but we're going to spend probably an entire episode on this in the near future. But another change that is occurring in front of our faces that you may not be aware of, because, like I said, we're all busy. And we miss a lot because there's so much. But many of our Fortune 500 corporations, Fortune 100 as a matter of fact, are abandoning DEI policies right now.
And for those of you who aren't aware, DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion. These are generally policies that focus on ensuring racial equality, gender equality, and equality for members of the LGBTQIA+ community. And this week, Walmart,
joined a growing list.
And Walmart being the largest private employer in the United States, has joined the list of many other, like Jonathan said, Fortune 100 companies, such as Molson Coors, Ford Motor Company, John Deere, Lowe's, Harley-Davidson, Brown-Forman, who is the maker of Jack Daniels, Tractor Supply, and Toyota Motor Company. All these companies have since dropped their DEI policies. Walmart actually was the first, I believe, to come out and say that they decided to go this way after conversations with an individual who has deemed himself to be a conservative
activist.
Yes, excuse me, conservative rights activist or conservative activist, Robbie Stark. And Robbie Stark did say after
Starbuck.
Oh, excuse me, Robbie Starbuck. And he did make an announcement on Twitter, I believe, after Walmart made its announcement, saying that this was the biggest win for their movement, and certainly...
And it is for their movement, because if you look, all of these companies are ingratiating themselves to Donald Trump right now. They're kowtowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an ancient term, basically laying on their face and debasing themselves for him. Because these values were allegedly, 5 years ago, all important.
Right.
And this is the way forward. This is our company showing its respect for minorities and those living in the smaller groups in our country to make sure that we're not leaving you behind and giving you the tools you need to be successful and to be able to compete with the majority. And now it's like it's nothing. They're dropping like flies, and you look at it, they're going as far as refusing to report to HRC.
The
Human Rights Campaign has an index that they maintain, and you can go through and search for any company and get its score based on a set of criteria, like do they respect the marital rights of their employees? Do they
discriminate? Domestic partners, I think was one.
Partner benefits, spousal benefits, you know, all of these different criteria. And all it is really is just answering a questionnaire. They're refusing to even answer the questionnaire anymore. They're not even going to talk about it anymore. And see, for me, that's bigger than the other part.
And the other part is pretty big. In addition to not providing that information to the Human Rights Campaign, as so many of the other companies have done, Walmart specifically laid out the fact that they will not be providing racial equity training for their employees, and also they are abandoning a program that they had that focused on evaluating their supply chain to ensure that their supply chain, the owners of the
companies to make sure
their products from were diverse in background. Actually, they had made great strides towards this, bringing up their numbers, their supplier numbers, to 51% that were owned and managed by women, minorities, veterans, or LGBTQIA+ peoples.
And look at this from a historical perspective, because history repeats itself. It does. And if it doesn't repeat exactly, it certainly rhymes. When you look at what's happening here, and the rise of any dictatorship, in any authoritarian regime, you see certain groups who are marginalized or re-marginalized in preparation for them to become scapegoats, to be utilized by the new leader as needed when there's a problem that he needs a little help with. And, you know, Hitler did it, Mussolini did it, you know, the names go on and on. Tito in Yugoslavia, Tojo in Japan. His view of the inferiority of the Korean and Chinese people, for example, using them as playthings for his soldiers. The horrors that were committed in World War II. That's just one chapter of human history, by the way. Just one chapter. The things that have been done to the Jewish people, you know, let's not forget, anti-Semitism is on the rise in our country, and indeed around the world. Anti-LGBTQ laws and behaviors, you know, we're seeing them being passed, some of them really hardcore, in places like the Republic of Georgia, which just a couple years ago was seeking entry into the European Union and was modeling itself on nations like France and Spain and Portugal and Britain, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, instead of Russia. But the point I'm making is you're seeing the marginalization of people. These things that are being said about us and about transgender people and about illegal immigrants, we're all vulnerable groups. It's not a chance for me to sit here with you and just whine about, oh, poor me. That's not what I'm saying. The way this builds is it comes after us first because we're easy targets.
Right.
We're the most vulnerable. But then when we're gone, who's next?
There's a brilliant cartoon that I saw shortly after the election, and it shows people lined up in a row standing beside dominoes, and on the dominoes are written, you know, it's like transgendered rights, gay rights, women's rights, you know, and the dominoes will continue to topple. And I know that it's not a fun topic to think about. But it's something that, unfortunately, with the incoming regime, it's something that we have to think about. And it's something that...
And we have to think about it because these are the words he's using, and words mean something.
Right. And we also want to call attention and shine a light onto these things to show that, A, there are still people out there talking about it. We're normal, everyday people. We have jobs. You know, we just happen to read the news a lot. And if podcasts are the way that you consume your news and you like the way that we've set this up, then I'm glad that you're here listening to us, and we hope that it helps you in some way. But we want you to know that you're not alone, and that we'll get through this together. But and we also want to draw attention to these things.
Yeah, and we want to end, you know, we're going to stop here with this topic. It's dark enough. We'll get into it in more detail later. But we're going to try and sign off from now on with a little expression that we came up with that we think is appropriate. Because the news is so serious that we're going over. But it's important to remember that no matter how horrible, no matter how dark things get, it is Devin and I's belief that it is our responsibility, you, our listeners, and us, to continue to bring forth the truth until the darkness is overcome.
Right. And again, that's kind of our purpose why we're bringing this show to you is for that very reason. So we've talked your ear off enough for this evening.
Thank you again for listening. And we do have our email available to you if you'd like to send us a note.
That'll be listed in the show details, along with all the sources from tonight's episode. And again, we will be back with more news. We have a couple topics that we didn't cover tonight, like Hunter Biden's pardon and Donald Trump's continued talk about tariffs. That will be plenty of fuel for conversation
There might be a bonus episode about Hunter Biden's pardon. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? But again, thank you so much for listening. And as Jonathan said, until next time, let us continue to bring forth the truth until the darkness has been overcome. Thank you and good night.
Good night.